Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start in New Orleans, sponsored by Popeye's Chicken Sandwich. Good. All right, the MVP of the Super Bowl gets a free trip to Disney World. Joe Burrow, college football's MVP, the star of LSU's national championship game last night, is getting a free trip to Cincinnati. The Queen City has a terrific theme park of its own, Kings Island, but it's also home to Mike Brown's penny-pinching Bengals, the mom-and-pop football franchise that's never won a Super Bowl. By virtue of their 2-14 season, the Bengals own the number one pick in the NFL draft. The team that hasn't won a playoff game since January 9th, 1991, will have first crack at selecting and developing the quarterback version of Barry Sanders. Yep, Joe Burrow is Barry Sanders. It's the only comparison that makes sense. Last night, in a 42-25 rout of Clemson, Burrow completed the most remarkable college football season since Sanders rushed for 2,600 yards and scored 39 touchdowns for Oklahoma State in 1988. This season, Burrow passed for 5,600 yards, 60 touchdowns, and completed 76% of his passes. In leading the Tigers to an undefeated season and a national title, he beat Texas, Florida, Auburn, Bama, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Clemson. He and the Tigers would probably beat the Bengals if the rules allowed it. Instead, he'll join them. That's the price for being the second coming of Barry Sanders. You get a free trip to an NFL wasteland. The original Barry went to Detroit. He dazzled the league for 10 straight years. He won one postseason game during his illustrious career. It's hard to overcome a poorly run football franchise. It doesn't matter how talented you are. The Bengals are poorly run and cheap. Former coach Marvin Lewis gets much of the blame for Cincinnati's playoff victory drought. It's an unfair knock. The drought started the exact same year owner Mike Brown took control of the franchise. Coincidence? I don't think so. Brown is the poor man's Jerry Jones. Poor man actually doesn't do Brown justice. Brown is the homeless man's Jerry Jones. No organization spends less money in pursuit of victory than the Bengals. For years, they lacked a scouting department. The 84-year-old Brown has refused to hire and pay someone to be the general manager of the franchise. Brown has served as GM and has paid himself a handsome salary for doing the job. Mike Brown's Bengals are Joe Burrow's reward for a remarkable college career. It's the equivalent of sending a Harvard valedictorian to work at a used car lot. You know what the Harvard grad would do? Refuse to go. Joe Burrow and his dad, Jimmy, should pull an Eli and Archie Manning, a John and Jack Elway, and refuse to play for the Bengals. Force a trade. It worked out quite well for Eli and Elway. Burrow grew up in Athens, Ohio, 3 hours from Cincinnati. His dad is a former professional football player, a former college coach. Joe and Jimmy know the history of the Bengals under Mike Brown. Why go play for the cheapest franchise in the NFL when you can potentially force a trade to the Carolina Panthers? Mike Brown or David Tepper? The richest owner in football or the poorest? The guy who paid Matt Rhule $60 million to leave Baylor or the guy who had to be forced to build a scouting department? It's not much of a choice, in my opinion. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts Mark Schlereth and Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, get us rolling. Should Joe Burrow refuse to play for the lowly Bengals?
No, he shouldn't refuse that. You're talking to a guy who had major scholarship offers and decided to go to Columbia. So remember who you're listening to right now. What are you running from? And what are you running to if you think you can figure out how the dice roll in the NFL? I'm a guy who wants to go somewhere and light the torch, not just carry the torch, be another one of. And if you look at our NFL, how it's divided by divisions, divided by conferences, it's interesting if you talk about him going to Cincinnati and he should pause. In terms of the AFC, there are only five AFC teams that made more appearances in the playoffs this decade than those lowly Cincinnati Bengals. Patriots, Ravens, Steelers, Texans, Chiefs. Everybody else, same amount of appearances or fewer. So I wouldn't play with that dice roll. I would sit there and say, put that on me. I want to go to a situation that's sour because, oh, it's going to be sweet once they get a load of Joe Burrow. For me and my money, I'm betting on myself, and I'm going to any situation and magnifying and making it better.
Yeah, my football self says absolutely not. You turn that thing around, you go in there, and you change the culture, and you do all that. That's my football sense. My business sense says 100% with you. Because like, I'll go back to Hard Knocks, and I'll never forget this. And as soon as I watched it, I said, that's why the Bengals won't win. So they had an injury, and instead of going out, an injury to, I think it was to a tight end. So they were down a tight end or two. And instead of going out and getting themselves a tight end, and this is training camp. So you've got an opportunity to go out there and figure out how you're going to trade for somebody or how you're going to get somebody off the wire. Mike Brown sat in a meeting and go, well, let's just move that defensive end to tight end. Anybody got an issue with that? And everybody went, and nobody said anything. I was like, you will never win anything. I mean, I remember like it was at that point I went, click. I go, well, Cincinnati's out. Click. So, yeah, like my football self says there's no way. You grew up in Ohio. You cannot do this, Burrow. You can't. But my business sense says you ain't ever going to win anything in Cincinnati. So, yeah, sit out. Mm. Force a trade. Mm.
No, he's an Ohio kid. He can't. He has to. He has to do what LeBron did for his area. He has to uplift the Cincinnati Bengals. Hometown hero, only 3 years away. We saw what happened when he asked and implored people to help the food bank in his hometown. He has to go to the Bengals. Now, when he goes, he has to go with some stipulations. He has to go knowing I need a supporting cast around me to help me elevate my game like it was elevated at LSU. Well, when I look at the Bengals roster, they have some guys that they can use. Tyler Boyd is a solid receiver. If they re-sign A.J. Green and he's healthy, he is a number one receiver. Joe Mixon in the mix, one of the top running backs in the league. Sure, you need to shore up the offensive line, but if Zach Taylor can steal the scheme that he saw at LSU this season, there's no reason why Joe Burrow can't be Cincinnati's version of LeBron.
And look, LeBron plays basketball. There's five guys on the court.
He's an all-state basketball player.
One guy in basketball can make an amazing difference. It takes a village in football. And the village just doesn't stop on the field. The coaching staff, the scouting department, the smart moves from the GM chair, all of that in order to ensure success in Cincinnati. The other thing, the reason why I say this, I went through this experience with Jeff George, Indianapolis product. He forced a trade to get to Indianapolis coming out of the draft. One of the biggest mistakes of his life. The Irsay family, particularly at that time, didn't know what the hell it was doing with the Colts. Wanting to come home and be a hometown hero for a long-suffering franchise is one of the biggest burdens you can take on. If you're a basketball player playing in the NBA, have at it. You and a couple of guys can fix it. Doesn't matter what the coaching is, doesn't matter what the ownership and all that other stuff is. In the NFL, if the village isn't with you, you're not going anywhere.
Well, I wouldn't paint it that way. I think it's misconstruing the situation. He is not wanting to go back necessarily to his hometown. He's going to get drafted to his hometown, so let's find a silver lining in that situation. It is funny, Mark, you talk about watching one decision and telling you someone's off.
Right.
We watched the Patriots this year, watched their tight end retire, trade away another tight end, and then at the end of the season complain they don't have a tight end.
Right.
So, and that's the Patriots. So every team finds itself in the same boat. They're one of 12 teams that haven't won a Super Bowl. But you know, there are some damn good teams that haven't won a Super Bowl. And one of them you even mentioned, the Panthers, haven't won a Super Bowl. You said, force a trade to go to the Panthers. Why? What's better there? Texans, ownership. Titans, Vikings, Bills. We can say ownership, but I want that to translate into production and overall holding up the trophy. And if you haven't done it yet, I'm not so guaranteed that you're going to do it going forward. So for me, I roll the dice into a sour situation to make it sweet.
Marcellus.
I'm listening. They just hired a coach for $70 million who never coached in the NFL.
Mike Brown is clearly the most frugal NFL owner we have. Mm-hmm. The history is clear as day.
Players still got helmets and shoulder pads. That's all you need. I mean, what else do you need? A weight room?
But honestly, he played at Ohio State, where they spared no expense in pursuit of victory. He played at LSU. They spared no expense in pursuit of victory. That's not the environment he's going to walk into in Cincinnati. And if he has the opportunity to force himself someplace else, bite that bullet. We beat up Eli Manning for doing it, and the Manning family, 2 Super Bowls. We beat up John Elway for doing it, and Jack Elway, 5 Super Bowl appearances, 2 Super Bowl titles, one of the greatest careers we've ever seen. Organization and situation matter tremendously in the NFL and at that position. I'm just talking. Again, what Marvin Lewis did there was a modern miracle given the level of support, and he gets beat up for it and blah, blah. But the not winning in the playoffs started in 1991. That was the last, in January 91. Mike Brown became the owner and controlling general manager of that team later in 1991. They haven't won a playoff game since. I wouldn't do it if I'm
But do you know the teams that, I'm talking about of late, what have you done for me lately? The teams that are less than the Bengals in terms of playoff appearances of late. Like, good teams, 49ers. Just a couple days ago, let alone years ago, we were like, the 49ers are trash. The Titans right now. We could talk about the Rams, like the Cowboys, Vikings. Like, these are teams recently that have had less success than what we're talking about in Cincinnati. What's so discouraging?
What's discouraging, and I'm with you. I mean, I look at this like, hey, as a kid that's from Ohio, that would be a really tough, and you'd take a beating, and it'd be a tough thing to be able to do that. But as Jason pointed out, man, you can go, you can shut up the critics, and you can go to a place, an organization that at least gives you the opportunity. I had this conversation with Mike Shanahan, and he had told me at one point there are 12 teams in the National Football League that are legitimate Super Bowl contenders, that have the ownership to contend for the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying that if an outlier happens that a team can win a Super Bowl, right? But there are 12 teams that are legitimately not just worried about growing their wealth on a year-to-year basis from an equity standpoint, but are actually spending money to win world championships. And the Bengals ain't one of them.
But like, the Cowboys are.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys haven't won.
I get that they haven't won.
It all has to do with how do you want to go down. Mm-hmm. Swinging with, again, because the Cowboys do a lot of dumb things I disagree with, but they're trying. And I'm just, Mike Brown makes his living off the Bengals.
Right. The difference is this. The Cowboys haven't won because the Cowboys can't get out of their own way. It's not because of the resources that they spend. The Bengals don't win because they can't get out of their own way and they won't spend the resources.
Or they didn't have a franchise quarterback like this.
Well, here's the thing, and right? I'm really surprised that you would take that take, because I've sat up here and I've heard you talk about core values as it relates to football. And so core values, one of those core values are resiliency, grit, perseverance. We're encouraging Joe Burrow to run from an adverse situation. What would we be teaching him? What would we be saying if we're saying, run for a better situation? He is from that area, in essence, 3 hours away. He has to go and be the savior. Joe Burrow cannot run from the Cincinnati Bengals in this situation.
You do know, I mean, like, football core values are universal from high school to college to pros. And so, Bucky, you coach high school football. You see kids jump to better situations all the time.
And I'm not a fan of that.
Okay, you were a recruited athlete. And it's like, oh, should I go to Ohio State where we got a chance to win a national championship? Or should I accept this offer from Maryland?
But what's analogous in that is not that. It's the fact that he commits somewhere or he goes with the process as it's flowing and then he interrupts that. The negative part about it is how you're going to be underwater in equity wherever you go day one. Think about it. If you don't do what Elway did, if you don't do what Eli did, which is multiple Super Bowl wins, then everyone's going to look at you and deem it a failure because you forced this and didn't win. Why would you set yourself up for such preposterous expectations when you're talking about just going into an NFL as a rookie.
The other situation you're setting yourself up for, why go into a situation where I'm not going to be supported like all the other elite quarterbacks in the NFL?
Carson Palmer didn't feel that way.
I understand that.
Andy Dalton didn't feel that way either.
Right.
Carson Palmer forced his way out of Cincinnati. He had enough and forced his way out of Cincinnati. Andy Dalton doesn't have this kid's talent.
I bet you Andy Dalton felt that way this year when he's getting sacked 9 times a game and then they benched him for a rookie.
Writing on the wall.
He already has a natural ready-made excuse. If he goes there and he fails, we're all going to blame the organization before we blame him.
Who wants a ready-made excuse?
He has a ready-made excuse. That spotlight will be on him in a different vein.
I'd be happy to go, and I'd be like the lead in the charge to change the culture of the organization. I'm just saying from a business aspect, I don't know that any one person can change the culture of that organization.
Everybody has to do taxes, and yet not everybody feels comfortable doing taxes, which doesn't seem right, especially when you consider all the amazing things these same people accomplish every day of their lives. TurboTax believes that with the right tools and encouragement, people can be good at anything, yes, even taxes. And to help people feel more comfortable with the tax process, TurboTax Live gives you personal access to experienced CPAs and EAs who are there for you even on nights and weekends. And they're happy to go through your return with you line by line to double check that you've done everything right, so you can be sure to get your best possible refund and feel 100% confident in your taxes. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Bucky Brooks is back, and we're joined now by Super Bowl champion Brady Papinga. Time for a big story. Let's move to Green Bay, where Aaron Rodgers and the Packers have had a bounce-back season. Rodgers' numbers were down a bit this year, and Yahoo's Dan Wetzel says Rodgers still needs to deliver another Super Bowl to Lambeau. But after missing the playoffs the last two seasons and starting over with a new coach, Rodgers and the Packers have far exceeded expectations just by getting to this weekend's NFC Championship game against the 49ers. All right, Marcellus, you agree with me, win or lose? Was this a successful year for Aaron Rodgers?
If they lose with a 13-3 record, that is not a successful year for Aaron Rodgers in terms of his legacy. It will be a building block year and a successful year for this team and this franchise as it's going forward with Matt LaFleur as their young coach. But Aaron Rodgers is going to sit back selfishly and have some scotch and sit there and say, oh, which direction is this heading in terms of me personally? It took less of Aaron Rodgers to get more out of this team. That's not a good formula. No player feels great, optimal in that situation. You want to go out there and not just be a winner, but be the reason you're winning. Right now, it's the running game and the defense. And I think that has an impact on not only his ego, but on his foresight of what's going forward in this situation. So this team taps out this week, as everyone expects, against San Francisco. The team may say arrows pointing up, but I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to say the same.
Did you see that sweet throw he took? He connected with Jimmy Graham.
Dart.
The one with Devontae Adams to seal the game. He's playing pretty good football.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you right now, win, lose, or draw, Aaron's going to feel pumped about this season. The Packers are going to feel like this was a successful season, because the bottom line is you just want to contend. Because winning championships, everything has to fall on the line. I mean, you look at the Giants championship when they beat the Patriots when they were 16-0. It literally came down a ball sticking to David Tyree's head for them to full-on win the Super Bowl. And so that's how I look at it. If you're contending and you're in Aaron's position and you're in the NFC Championship game, you're on the right track. Now it's just a matter of having those things fall into place for you to get over the top.
Man, I run the risk of being the guy that hates all the old quarterbacks, but Aaron Rodgers is on the descent. He's on the decline. 3 straight years, his passer rating has come down, his completion percentage has come down, and by his standard, he hasn't played really, really well this year. He has shown flashes of being the old Aaron Rodgers, but this team has done the other stuff around him. Aaron Jones, the running game, the defense stepping up. I believe he needs to win this game to just reverse the narrative on how people are viewing him. Because I don't think people are seeing him as the same Aaron Rodgers. This is a game where he has an opportunity to show people he still has the magic.
Say it.
Because they're prohibitive underdogs in this game. When you look at their roster doesn't stack up to the 49ers. So the only way that I can see them winning, Aaron Rodgers has to be that special guy. If he does that, then I think we view Aaron Rodgers like we always have viewed him in the past.
Bucky, he has Davante Adams at wide receiver and the ghost of Jimmy Graham, whatever's left.
The ashes. Running ashes.
I mean, those numbers about this is down, that's down, blah, blah, blah. The personnel around him is down.
We love making excuses for everybody's performance. Now, the guy is paid to be one of the premier players in the game.
He has his team in the NFC Championship.
Isn't he supposed to
elevate him? They went 13-3 in the NFC.
But I was here last week, and when I looked at my note, it said they were 10-1 against teams that were 500 or less. Mm. So they hadn't really been knocking off these heavyweight teams. When they faced heavyweights, they've been knocked out. When they went on the road and played the San Francisco 49ers, they got obliterated. Yeah. When they played the Chargers on the road, they got obliterated. At some point, when we're talking about him being the baddest man on the planet, doesn't he have to get them over the top?
No. You move the goalposts. Was this a successful year for Aaron Rodgers?
No. I'm going to say it again. There's no I in team, but there is a me. M-E, damn it. And guess what? When this team is 13-3, that sounds great. But if we lose this week, I am now 1-3 in NFC Championship games. Guess what? When they start talking about Aaron Rodgers, what are they going to say? You only beat Jay Cutler. And then you're going to say, well, I have one Super Bowl ring. And they're going to say, and that's it? Because people who were less than you have more than you. And Aaron Rodgers is not sitting there even satisfied with 13-3. Tell you why. They won the Super Bowl with 15 guys on IR at a 10-6 record. Mm. Came back the next year, everyone's healthy. Fully loaded, 15-1. What happened? Got in the playoffs, 1-done. You think that is not living in Aaron Rodgers right now? Like, these records sound great, but unless you finish the deal, we don't know what's going to come from this going forward.
I'm blown away.
What?
the man was six? They won six games last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They made a seven-game improvement in terms of wins and losses.
He's nearing the end.
The guy threw, six interceptions or four interceptions this year? He threw four interceptions all year. Mm-hmm. There's just no way. He's playing in the NFC. There's no way this year isn't a success. What are we talking about?
Third worst passer rating of his career.
Let me interject here. I'm confused. So you guys are telling me this. Let's say they won 11-5 this year, and they got knocked out in the divisional round. But his stats were far superior. You're going to say that's a successful year for Aaron Rodgers? What are all the stats for?
Well, I mean, for
aren't
him,
they all directed for one end?
What end?
To win the flipping game.
You act like they don't cut Super Bowl champions. You act like Super Bowl champions play fine work.
I'm surprised at you because you played there. We played in Green Bay. What do they call Green Bay? Title town. The only way they're satisfied in Green Bay are to win titles. The trophy is named after the greatest coach in Green Bay Packers history. And if the Lombardi Trophy.
If that mindset was true, Tom Brady wouldn't be a free agent
right now.
All that success, I thought it was about the end game. He won the Super Bowl last year.
Tom Brady isn't playing nearly as well as Aaron Rodgers.
It's a whole other topic.
And that's a whole
other topic.
But it is Title Town. And the people in Title Town, are smart enough to know there's a path to the title.
It's a process. It's a process.
Once every 20 years.
So our path, based on how we play, because I hear Marcellus talk about past performance predicts future. So I'm looking. Mm. Everything is on the descent. Completion percentage and passer rating. Mm. But I'm supposed to believe that it's going to decline again next year, but they're going to be a better team.
Yeah.
They play a tougher schedule next year than they do this year.
Yeah.
I just don't see how this can be viewed as a success.
Because they're going to have better receivers next year.
Are they?
Are they? Yes.
They've been drafting receivers. Really? They've been bringing receivers in.
Jordy Nelson's going to go
back.
Their head coach is going to be better. This is the first time Matt LaFleur's had a managing game.
Rich Ornberger is back, and we're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. Time now for a big story. Let's return to Luke Kuechly, who stunned the football world yesterday, retiring at the age of 28. Kuechly has suffered several concussions in recent years, and in his retirement announcement, he said he wanted to continue playing, but that it wasn't the right decision. Kuechly made 7 Pro Bowls in 8 seasons in the NFL. He is a surefire Hall of Famer. And he now becomes the latest star player to walk away from the game at the young age, joining the likes of Andrew Luck, Rob Gronkowski, Calvin Johnson, and Patrick Willis, among others. Question here is this a bad sign for football, Kuechly retiring?
It's good and it's bad. You're really looking at the dichotomy, the dynamic, really, of the job of football versus the business of football. And I think players right now are running a different mathematical equation in terms of their career. And that's great for football, the business, because you guys have now afforded players like myself and others so much in terms of platform riches that guys can leave the game early. But it's also highlighting the underbelly and the ugly part of football, which is it's bad for your health. It's occupational hazard. There's hell to pay as soon as you cross the white lines, and different degrees depending on position. What Luke Kuechly is saying right now is he's run an equation that maybe before his 8-year career and $63.5 million in earnings, that he would have ran through all of those walls. But in the process of running through those walls, having 4 diagnosed concussions, has now come to a realization that his future and what he already has attained from the game is something that he has to weigh heavy. And that equation changes for every player based on what you have gotten from the game and what you want from your life after the game. So respect to Luke Kuechly and respect to the NFL for giving us this opportunity to have this luxury such a young time in his career, because there was a day, maybe Schlereth's day or before, where they didn't have that same luxury and they had to run through that wall just to make sure that they were okay.
I think it's great for the NFL. I think there's nothing but benefit here, where you can sit there and say, hey, man, I am at the top of my game. I'm one of the greatest players. I mean, you look at Luke Kuechly and people say, well, he's one of the smartest football players I've ever been around. Luke Kuechly is one of the smartest people I've ever been around. That guy has skill set, and he's got the ability to do whatever he wants. And the NFL has afforded him the opportunity to make that $63.5 million after 8 years and say, you know what? What do I want to do? Yep. We've never been in a place where we've been more empowered from not only a financial standpoint, but an educational standpoint. I know what I've done to my body from the neck up, specifically from the neck up, most importantly, but also from the neck down. Yeah. And now I have the opportunity to weigh that out. I came in and was a starter my rookie year, made $45,000. Mm. That was in 1989, right? Yeah, I mean, you don't have those opportunities. To me, this is a great thing. It should be celebrated. The league should look at something like Luke Kuechly or somebody like Luke Kuechly and celebrate the fact that, hey, guys, you can come into this league and you can play for 8 years and you can be set for life and then you can do whatever you want to do. And here's the beauty of Luke Kuechly. When you don't get your identity in what you do for a living, when your identity comes outside of what you do for a living, because if your identity is in what you do for a living, when that gets taken away from you, you know what? You're going to struggle. Mm-hmm. It's just fact. Yep. You're going to get pink-slipped, outsourced, whatever the case may be. Downsized, cut, you will struggle. But if your identity isn't in, I'm a football player, if that's not how you identify, then you can go on and do whatever you want to do. So good for the league, good for Luke Kuechly. This is a great to me. It's great for the league.
Tagging along with what you just said, and I completely agree, I think this is good for the NFL because this isn't a bad sign. It's a sign of the times. Look, we're a woke culture now. Everybody's more aware than they were 20 years ago. I mean, when you were starting out in 89, everybody had styrofoam cups. You know what I mean? We were sipping out of plastic straws. Mm-hmm. I just stayed last night in Beverly Hills. I wouldn't be caught dead with a plastic straw. I mean, you would be castigated in the streets. It's not the right thing to do anymore. And it's because we're all aware of consequences now. And sometimes, even for the greatest gifts, like the NFL and the pride that it serves communities with, and some of these players and how they serve their teams and their teammates, we understand there is a consequence attached. So if you're going to play this game at an elite level like Luke Kuechly did for so many years, and you're going to benefit so greatly from the sport and the sport benefiting from your hard work as well, walking away at the right time, I think, serves the NFL correctly, because we're not going to read about how he went broke. We're not going to read about how he is broke. Mm-hmm. We're going to read about how he improved his life even beyond the game and in turn improved the game.
Yeah, I got to hop on board with all of you and say I think it's great for the NFL. I think that it's a teachable moment, I think, for a lot of young players in the sense of you should realize, like, make as much money as you can, take care of that money so that you're not beholden to the NFL for longer than your body will allow. And so I know a little bit about Luke Kuechly because he's from Cincinnati, Ohio. My brother, my nephews go to the high school, St. Xavier, that Luke Kuechly went to. I know how that school, it's a private Catholic school, I know how they prepare young men, not just as athletes, but for participation in all of society and how they try to build young men. And so I look at football, and it's like we love, and a lot of people love to say the NBA is the greatest thing in the world, but I look at football and how it basically requires you to go to college and experience some form of a higher education. How much you invest in it is up to you. But I look at Luke Kuechly from St. Xavier to Boston College to the NFL. This guy is making this decision not just because he has the wealth to move on, but because he has the intellectual wealth. He's been developed as a full person, and he can think of something else to do beyond football. Sure. This is a great story and should be role modeled for other NFL players.
Yeah, there are two sides to this coin, and I won't gloss over the other side of the coin, which is basically an example. Your NFL career is like you taking a conscious last hold of breath and going underwater for those treasures. And then you realize Luke Kuechly did in 8 years and some others in 5 years, 10 years. It's time to come up for air because it's hell under there. It's hard to play football. Basketball is a better job. Basketball is not a better business necessarily in totality, but to the individual, some would say it is. But the game, the job, there are 40 surgeries up here combined minimum, I think. Mark, you 27 in?
29
in. I'm 10.
I've had four, okay. five.
And all I wanted to let people know is...
I had one.
You had one? There you go. Add it up. But it's all with love. And I think it's conditional love, and that's okay. I think there's so many times we were told as kids that if you don't love football wholeheartedly, something's wrong with you. You don't have to have unconditional love for the game. There are conditions. One of the conditions for Luke Kuechly was, I have had enough of these concussions and whatever it can do to compromise me going forward. And I respect that.
I love this conversation because, you know, it's timely. We just saw two videos. One where Kuechly sat in front of his camera in his linebacking room, and he addressed the fan base and the ownership and his teammates and really all of the membership of the NFLPA, former players and current, and said, I've done enough. I've done all I could. And tearfully stepping away from his post in the middle of that defense. We've seen another video this week of a talented Hall of Fame probable wide receiver shouting from his doorstep at the mother of his children fighting to get back into the same league in Antonio Brown. Both of these guys have suffered head trauma. One of these stories feels like it's gonna end poorly. One of these stories feels like it's gonna end well. I think it is a very difficult, it's a very difficult decision to make, but you have to know when it's your time to leave.
Time now for the most fierce discussion of the day. I wanna return to the topic of black NFL head coaches and a trend in sports that may be limiting their rise. Analytics. Yesterday, I read a story about the role of Browns chief strategy officer, Paul DePodesta, in the hiring of new coach, Kevin Stefanski. DePodesta is a proponent of analytics, which is basically using massive amounts of statistics and data to inform decision-making. Cleveland.com described DePodesta's thinking and football analytics this way. It's a way of thinking, a way of doing business, a way of ideally of winning. It's brain over gut, data over instincts. It's gathering information that assists in drafting players and calling plays and everything in between. It's being smart and open-minded and collaborative and adaptable, and it has spread around the NFL. Analytics spread first in Major League Baseball. It was originally called Sabermetrics, which is short for the Society for American Baseball Research. In the 1990s, the Oakland Athletics, under general manager Billy Beane, fully embraced sabermetrics and analytics. Analytics next moved to the NBA. Before he was the face of the NBA's China fiasco, Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey was the face of the league's analytics revolution. Football was the last sports to catch analytics fever. In 2016, the Cleveland Browns hired Billy Beane's assistant general manager, Paul DePodesta, to bring analytics and that wave to the NFL. The wave is here now.
The NFL has embraced analytics. Among other things, it shapes NFL coaches' philosophy on fourth down decisions and two-point conversions. Decision-making in professional sports are heavily influenced by the embrace of analytics. Guess which group of people are seen as most resistant to analytics? Black people. Here's an excerpt from what my good friend Michael Wilbon wrote for The Undefeated in 2016. The mission was to find black folks who spend any time talking about advanced analytics, whose conversations are framed by or even casually include references to win shares or effective shooting percentage, whip, or points per possession. It's a failed mission so far, totally empty. Conclusion: advanced analytics and black folks hardly ever mix. Set aside the tiny handful of black men who make a living somewhere in the sports industry dealing with the numbers, there is absolutely zero mingling. Here's a clip of my good friend Charles Barkley talking about Daryl Morey and analytics in 2015.
I'm not worried about Daryl Morey. He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics. He went out and got James Harden and got Dwight Howard. Ain't gonna tell me that's analytics. Then he went out and got Trevor Ariza, but then he went out and got Josh Smith. So first of all, I've always believed analytics was crap, and I never mentioned the Rockets as a legitimate contender because they're not.
From 2001 through 2014, the NBA averaged 11 black coaches. There are 6 black head coaches working in the NBA today. Analytics is about brains over guts. Your gut might tell you racism explains the dwindling number of black coaches in the NFL. The data might say it's our reluctance to jump on the analytics bandwagon. Analytics isn't going away. We can get with it or we can get left behind. All right, Marcellus, get us rolling. Woo. Is the NFL's embrace of analytics a factor in holding back black coaches?
No. I think if you chase analytics, you'll just be chasing the latest wave that tries to explain the lack of minority black coaches in the NFL. You guys remember all the waves? Let's start with what Bucky likes to highlight, the thinking positions. I remember, let's go back 30, 40 years, thinking positions, where it used to just be the safety and the linebacker and the center and the quarterback. White positions, because the black players not deemed as intelligent, perceived as intelligent as those white players in those thinking positions. So now let's talk about where we are today. I think two things are really at play here. Because if you chase the analytics, guess what? There was a time where we were chasing the young offensive coordinators, the quarterback coaches, the offensive quality control guys. Like, we continue to say, put yourself in those buckets, but they continue to move the bucket. Two things happened. One, when I retired, not too many brothers wanted to coach. I'm one. And a lot of my brothers like, nah, dog, not coaching. It's almost like how baseball is perceived at the high school level. Like, you're good at it, but what? I don't see the end in sight. How many years in the minors? How many teams? How many cities? And a lot of brothers was like, I'm not coaching. So there's a smaller pool of applicants when you talk about black coaches. If you talk about, especially in the buckets that exist right now, well, we got Byron Leftwich, Eric Bieniemy. How many guys really in those offensive positions? And the second thing is, if you really look at it, when you have that small pool and the guys are not doing exactly what they're poaching from, you're going to be in this situation where you have 3 black head coaches, which, crazy enough, is reflective of the population of black people in this country. Like, 13% of the coaches in NFL are black, and 13% of the people in this country are black. Until we change, our cultural values are what we desire out of the game. Post-retirement, I think a lot more guys want to get into what I'm doing. Brothers love to talk it. But a lot of guys I don't see want to do the same thing and go through those rigors and that road to becoming black head coaches.
I think it does play a small part in why we haven't seen as many minority coaches. I think you have to kind of run it up the flagpole. The people that hire are your general managers. And so when you have an embrace of analytics at the highest level, most of those people come from, no disrespect to Ivy League, but Ivy League schools. Yeah. And much like you've seen baseball, where baseball has become very Ivy League heavy in those upper management positions, where you're not having a lot of people of color that are there. And I'm not saying it's a conscious effort to keep blacks out. However, if you go all the way back to the high school level, STEM, science, technology, and mathematics, you don't see a heavy population of blacks delving in those subjects. And so if you're going to be a part of the new trend, and the new trend says in sports, analytics are being a part, we have to populate the pipeline with those who are interested in math. And so because you don't have many who are delving in the numbers, you have a very, very small pool. So, yes, it has played a part because we haven't actively participated in that avenue when it comes to finding jobs in sports.
Well, I mean, thank goodness all the championships Cleveland won. Paul D. Podesta was 1-15 when he took over in 16. He's 0-16 in 17, 7-8-1 in 18. Yeah, these analytics are really whipping ass in the NFL. I mean, the Cleveland Browns, for crying out loud. Listen, there are plenty of guys who would embrace analytics that are black that aren't getting opportunities. And there are plenty of guys who aren't embracing analytics that are white that are getting opportunities.
Boom.
Sorry about it. I mean, I think one of the big issues, and I think you touched on it, and I think it's true, the majority of, in my experience in the NFL, the majority of white coaches spend their time on the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And in this game where it's all about quarterbacking and offense, and that's become, that. I mean, you get a young offensive coordinator. Yeah. Those are the guys they want to hire. And the majority of those guys happen to be white.
And I also think the majority that analytics has its biggest influence on the offensive side of football. And so, again, I want to be clear. The question is, does the NFL's embrace of analytics a factor in holding black coaches back? And so, does it explain it all? Absolutely not. But if the sports world is being overrun by analytics, it is across the board. Again, sabermetrics started in 1971 and then really took flight in baseball in the 1990s with the Oakland Athletics. And sabermetrics and analytics moved to basketball in the last 10, 15 years. And go look at what's happened with basketball coaches. Go look at the whole conversation. I talked to these guys in my spare time away from the show all the time about people upset, like, hey, man, we can't get head coaching jobs anymore. And they keep throwing this whole, if you're not an analytics guru. And so go look at the six NBA head coaches right now. Five of them are old school guys on their second or third rip. Lloyd Pierce is the only guy that's a first-time head coach. He's the coach of the Hawks. And guess what system he came out of? The 76ers and the process and the whole analytics. So he's put himself in that lane and gotten a job. The same thing, this analytics revolution is sweeping through the NFL, and if you can't talk that language or if it sounds completely foreign to you and you can't be a participant in the direction the whole organization is going, because everybody, like it or not, is moving that direction, it makes you a less appealing candidate than maybe a Kevin Stefanski or whoever can talk that talk.
You're absolutely right. And so here's what has to change. What has to change is the person of color, or whoever does this, is going to be the one that is at the forefront of the room. The person who embraces the data, the film, with a little bit of their own instincts, is going to be the one that goes to the front of the line. Because as you talk about the hiring, well, when you have a room full of people who are big believers in analytics, you have to be able to speak that language. Now, if you can take that language, use it the way that you see it, because we all delved in analytics as players. We called it tendencies. When we used to get the sheets, the scouting reports. What happened on third down?
Yes.
What routes did they run? What's the hot chart for the quarterbacks?
Right.
We've all dealt in analytics. It is now called analytics.
Mm.
Coaches have to be able to speak that language while still being an old school football coach. You have to meet them halfway so you can get an opportunity to do what you want to do.
Right. Yeah. One of the issues, though, is you can tell me about analytics of, you know, a guy's 40s times and vertical jumps, and you can tell all that. You know, the dude's a coward. He can't play.
Hmm.
I mean, that's the way it works. And so is there a place for analytics? Certainly there's a place. But some of these sports, baseball being one of them, has gone overboard.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to talk about analytics, and we want to talk about the Houston Astros that essentially got rid of all their scouting, right? And they're just doing it by the numbers with my Rapsodo reports and the spin rates and all the different things they're working on. Well, you know what was more poignant for them winning a championship?
Yeah.
Was their cheating analytics is what was more important. So, you know, the analytics, everything has its place.
Point.
Everything has its place, but let's not think it's the end all be all, because it's not.
Hell of a point. Mark's son plays Major League Baseball.
Bingo. Yeah, I just think we're moving the goalposts once again. Like you said, Bucky, we could change the terminology, analytics, and then we had tendencies. But what's going to happen is if you want to chase that, it will change again in language. So as soon as you see analytics hit baseball, what happens? You see the rise of Latinos and you see the decline of blacks. And players, and then what are they going to poach their managers from? The pool, and that's going to look more brown than it's going to look black. And same thing in basketball. Now everyone's coming from Europe. There's a quarter of the league that is now European. I just say that you can't get caught up in the waves, because there's really just all of it is a mirage to something that we already know is a constant, which is just knowing the game.